Hi, I'm Peter Haddock from Content with Media, and welcome to another podcast edition. And this edition is supported by Ritchie Brothers, the used equipment specialists. So you can buy from Ritchie Brothers, you can sell with Ritchie Brothers, and you can even sell to Ritchie Brothers. They just want you to do business with them. And today, thanks to Ritchie Brothers, I have a very special guest on the show.
And he is Stephen Slessor, and he is the president of the Chartered Institution of Civil Engineering Surveyors. Stephen, welcome onto the podcast.
Peter, thank you very much for the welcome and the absolutely intensity around the words of president. I'm not used to receiving such welcomes. Normally, it's a kick and saying, look at what problems you've caused me now. So it's great to be here, and thanks very much for having me.
Right, Stephen, we actually known each other for a number of years, and that's why I was super excited to learn that you are the president this year. And basically, one of the things that I know we've talked about for many years is actually how can we do things better? How can we collaborate together? And how can we really take advantage of all the investment that's going on in the construction industry? So tell me a little bit about yourself, Stephen, and also let's open up the introduction around the institution and how you fit into that role.
You're right, Peter. We are really very much on the cusp of that generational change. There's a lot of investment coming into the industry, and it's been a real privilege for me, to be honest, to be made president at a time where all this is happening. You know, a bit about my background. So I have been a quantity surveyor for the best part of 25 years. I started off in construction as an operative, just on the shovel. That was my first role. And then I went on to laying tarmac, driving machines. And I just went my way up, went to night school to do a quantity surveying course. And I went and did day release. I've been really fortunate to have lots of supportive employers around us to give me these opportunities and make the most of them. And that's resulted me in my current role, which is regional director with Galliford Try in Scotland, which looks after their Morrison Construction and ESD businesses, which combined turnover roughly about £100 million a year in Scotland. You know, we're very busy, which is always good. But obviously with COVID, that brings sort of lots of challenges. From an institution perspective, I've been a member of the Institute for around about 15 years, very, very active in the regions in Scotland for many years. I sit on a number of Scottish government committees and advisory groups. And really, being a president with your peers is probably the pinnacle of your professional career. And so for me, for it to come now is just absolutely incredible. And I think the opportunities it presents to us to be able to help facilitate change and take advantage of these opportunities that come along is important. Super excited to be here. Thanks very much for the opportunity to come and talk to people. It's great to actually talk to people rather than sort of talk to, you know, it'd be nice to talk with.
Yeah, and the last time I saw you some time ago, Stephen, we were actually talking with your supply chain as well for a very important project. And I think what was great about that is we learned from that experience that this is an industry that needs to do exactly that, talk more, collaborate more. And we've got some really, really interesting challenges ahead for us. And we're going to go through those as we move forward. But, you know, first of all, what I wanted to do is talk to you about the Institute and also your members and surveyors, because, you know, what I talk about a lot is earthworks, and you've said, like you said before, you've been on the tools, been on the diggers as such. And you know, there's always been this sort of disconnect between the earthworks PLC, for want of a better word, and the rest of the industry. And the surveyors are the kind of people that are now bringing that together a bit more with the likes of 3D machine control from Leica Geosystems and other providers.
You're absolutely spot on there, Peter. And I think one of the things that people often don't understand is that the connection between surveyors and earthworks and an overall construction project is actually pretty symbiotic. And I say that is that because our members are becoming more and more information gatherers and information managers. And those that are in the earthworks fraternity will understand the importance of that digital journey. So, you know, these days, like Trimble, for example, have got a lot of heavy equipment that's focused on getting quality and assurance in earthworks delivery through driving these sort of digital enhancements. But surveyors are fundamentally out these days capturing information and managing information. So the way that we capture information, gone are the days where you just got a survey out with a dumpy level and a theodolite. The technology around LiDAR, drone surveys, you know, it's mind-blowing and it's constantly changing. And with that constant change. You need new competencies, new ways of regulating and making sure that quality standards are there. And what happens is that that collaboration you talked about earlier is how that translates is about making sure you've got a real good quality digital model, which can then be used by the earthworks contractors, for example, to be able to get real accuracy and quality in their work and drive efficiency. Because say, for example, you've got a flood defence scheme of which there's pumping station, flood walls, big earthwork buns. You know, the earthworks part of that is absolutely critical to make sure it's right for flood protection. The interaction between the digital model and an excavator isn't really thought about in a big way, because it's just something that people accept is done. And then traditionally you'd have batters, you'd have engineers going out monitoring levels, you know, there'd be a lot of this work is now in a digital environment. And I suppose getting the collaboration right is key, because what happens is that as an industry, we don't naturally talk to each other very often. And I think the point I was making earlier, it's nice to talk with as opposed to talk to. And certainly from my perspective, you've got some real specialist knowledge in earthworks that, you know, I can see that transcend right the way through the project life cycle. And so it's important that the surveyors work collaboratively with earthworks contractors who work collaboratively with main contractors. Then all of a sudden you get this real sort of real great product at the end of it that's got a real digital trail right the way through it. I go back to that point I make, it's a symbiotic relationship. We've all got to work together well for it to be successful for each and one of the individual components that make up of that.
You see, that's exactly right, Stephen. And one of the things I've been talking about in 2020 and now why I was so excited to get you on at the start of 2021 is we have this connected worksite approach now that is coming into the industry. I first saw a table where I got to speak to Leica Geosystems Hexagon, actually, that own them in America, this table at ConExpo, which showed the connected worksite, the assets and the individuals that actually played a role throughout all of that element. And I think for us, it's really understanding how we can bring people through to understand the different technologies, what some of the challenges are, and how the surveyor can actually work with, instead of being seeing that person that's almost against the operator and the driver and everything, and support that. You mentioned earlier that information gathering, but it's actually not just the gathering, is it? It's the management, and then it's the process of actually looking at that throughout the project, understanding the nature of earthworks and when we're in different conditions, like, you know, it's been snowing, it's been raining, etc. And having that knowledge and sharing that between the different people closer, isn't it? Tell me what your thoughts are about that sort of connected worksite.
I mean, you're absolutely right. And I think connected worksite is also, it's all replicated right the way through the sector and industry now. And I think for me, it's representative of that digital change that we're going through. And there's a couple of points I really want to make here, because the first thing about that digital transformation is that getting there is incredibly difficult, because it relies on people, it relies on surveyors, operators, clients, contractors, it relies on everybody right the way through the project life cycle. And everybody has different levels of digital maturity. So it's very difficult to sort of say, right, we're just going to do this connected worksite right now and everyone's just going to go and do it, because you're not going to drive the right behaviours. You're actually pushing people apart rather than bringing them together. So one of the big things that's really needed is education and people understanding what the connected worksite does and how it helps them, how it benefits them. And it's not just another digital tool that they can use. They really need to understand that. I think the second part is actually that the connected worksite is really the start. And it's great to see all that sort of in the domain where people can understand the connectivity and the interactivity between all the different parties. But I think where I've seen lots of trends and lots of sort of future development is actually taking that and using it to go into process automation and make things more transparent. I work with a company called Hypervine based in Glasgow, which is a construction technology company, and their strapline is no surprises. And their technology is almost looking at things, for example, outputs of machines and location and movement and tracking data, and actually bringing all that data into one place and saying, right, if we do this and this differently, we can actually get a better result and everybody benefits. That theme of collaboration comes right back to actually understanding how surveyors work in that space, how that knowledge is gathered and how that knowledge is used. I think that if anything, in theory, having this almost like independent arbiter of this is what actually happened, it makes it much easier because you don't have the conjecture, you don't have the politics, you don't have the sort of personalities that can get in the way of these things. And people need to fundamentally remember that regardless of anything that happens with technology, construction is a people business. You need to be able to get on with people and you need to be able to work with people and do that well if you're going to be successful. And what Connected Worksite allows people and surveyors to do is to support that gathering that information to facilitate that good working practice and that collaborative approach.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting about what you've said there is there are a number of different software solution players like the one you've mentioned. Actually, I'm going to look them up after this podcast because that sounds exactly the type of thing I need to talk about with them. But what that does is it takes away, like you say, it takes away the conflict of construction, takes away that blame game, doesn't it? And what it does is it shows people in a real world model. And I like to say this is the kind of one version of the truth scenario. So it's like, this is the truth. This is what's actually happened. Here's where we're going, and therefore bringing it all together. So this role of this change in the future of integrated software, sort of cloud-based solutions, you know, will drive productivity, but it's part of the step of the journey, isn't it? So I guess what you're saying to me is we need to consider how we approach this new approach and how actually we make it more of a collaboration. Let's do better. Let's learn from previous projects and let's take all that information and be clear that we've got a vision. And how do you think in your experience so far, how do you think that can be achieved? And what type of changes do people need to make in their job roles? So we say construction manager, do we have to say digital construction manager or digital site manager, or what do you think?
I think these transitional places where we're heading to around new competencies, so like the institution, for example, we're just currently doing a strategy review where as we head into the next sort of 5 to 10 years, and I think if anything, we're actually looking at 25 to 30 years this time. Our normal strategy reviews are 3 to 5 years, but the UK government will come up with an infrastructure plan that's 25 years. You know, as a professional body with our members really embedded in that space, we need to sort of be able to match along the same lines. And the one thing that I keep coming back to is that these skills and these new way of doing things is it's almost like the ultimate CPD. It's the evolvement of a role that you're already doing. So, you know, I don't see a space where people would be called digital site managers, but if they're getting accredited by our institution or CIOB or any others, I would expect them to be a set of competencies that they're assessed against around the digital capability. And that is to give like their peers assurance when they're working with them, they've got the same level of skills and ability and that everybody else has got. And it also gives people, especially young people coming in the industry, they've actually got a measure that they can benchmark themselves and say, do you know what, I'm at this level and I've been assessed. And that's really important. One of the big dangers in all this, Peter, is there's so many different bits of software, so many different bits of technology, and it's evolving, constantly evolving all the time. And I'm just going to go back to Hypervine again and talk about something that we're doing on a flood scheme up in the northeast of Scotland at Arbroath. We've actually rolled out effectively Bluetooth devices that are attached to every single resource. And what we're trying to do is understand movement and using that information. We talked about transparency and connected site, but using that information to actually generate efficiencies that we can all work with and all do something with. And actually, like, for example, reducing carbon. One of the things that we learned pretty quickly was that we thought our movements of the excavators was what was causing our higher carbon emissions. It's total false. It was actually how the dumpers and the dump trucks were working that was causing much higher carbon emissions, because the haul routes were taking too long. We weren't getting a handle on the volume of fuel that's used. A couple of tweaks, really minor tweaks, actually saved us about 10% on our fuel cost in a short space of time by actually not just having that information, but capturing it and analysing it and looking at it. So that skill set is actually about understanding the trends and then what to do with it. It isn't about capturing the data. That's, you know, we've actually invested in data analysts and data scientists to how the captures data are managed. So the type of skills that we're investing in aren't the traditional ones you would normally find in construction. I see that actually that expansion of skills and knowledge, bringing new people into industry, that will drive change and innovation through that way. So yes, you'll still have your site manager who will have digital knowledge and being able to work systems and procedures and automation, but he will be more employed in terms of understanding the trends and what to do to change that. For surveyors, I think that'll be exactly the same. And that's already seen that now, where the surveyors will go out and collect the like 3D BIM models, or all the information for 3D BIM models, but actually translating what that information means, translating that knowledge and managing that knowledge so it's in a consistent and verifiable way, is what's going to really be the next 15, 20, 30 years way of doing business.
And I think the other thing you've pulled upon there is lots of different software things, and the challenge we've got at the moment, it's a bit like the autonomous car. It's a bit like saying if we could stop cars one day and go full autonomous the next day, then actually that would be the benefit, because we wouldn't have any problems in between. What we really need to understand is setting standards for data collection, and actually having the same standards for how that data is transferable, is collected, is in real time as well as we move forward. Because like you say, the dump truck movements, if you find out the next day that those movements have been changed because of circumstances, well, you can't go backwards. If you find out in real time that, hey, we're getting this kind of level of activity drop off, then you can see that actually there's a problem with the haul road, let's go and fix it, or there's something else has happened. Well, let's take some of those ADTs off the job, because we're just getting queues and we're just burning carbon. But it's real time, but it's also standards, isn't it? That all the equipment is going to work to these same standards, so that they're easily inputted into these larger holistic job site solution management software.
And Peter, the easiest analogy to describe that is VHS versus Betamax. But, you know, back in the day in the 80s, when you had these two rival formats, everyone rallied around VHS to the expense of Betamax. And CDE, Common Data Environment, is no different. We're really in that space at the moment where there's lots of different standards and lots of work going on to get to that common data platform. There's still some work to do there, you know, because a lot of companies have built their IP, their intellectual property on these systems, and they work well with these systems. So there's always that natural hesitancy, but we're getting beyond that now. You've got things like third-party API connectors, which can talk about different systems. So you've got these integrators. So these integrators become much more important, being able to generate that kind of consistency of information and being able to let people drop in and drop out of specific things without people getting so bogged down with the detail around which system they're using. And it's all about understanding the information rather than gathering the information.
Yeah, I totally agree. And one of those key steps you've done as the Institute to get there, you know, and to get that sort of integration, is you've now become an affiliate of the UK BIM Alliance. So tell me, one, people listening probably won't have a clue what the UK BIM Alliance is. And then really, why have you guys become an affiliate member as an institute to this alliance? Because that's, again, another integration that's happening in the industry. And why is that going to benefit both sides?
So the UK BIM Alliance is what you've just described earlier, actually, Peter, in simple terms. It's an alliance of separate individual organisation bodies, individuals, companies that actually want to bring BIM together and to create this common standard that everybody can actually use and take advantage of. They are very active in driving international and British standards in order to that everyone can rally around. So the reasons for joining the as an affiliate is really that kind of organization is something the institution wants to be part of. We're a progressive digital-led institution. We want to be in the middle of that. Actually, our members will have a lot to offer, because the BIM models and the BIM environment has been dominated by architects and people that are in the built environment sector going up the way. There's not that many people in the UK BIM Alliance that are involved in things going across the way or down the way in terms of the building, so underground, creating the platforms and the earthworks. And so a lot of our members will be able to add a lot of value in terms of that information exchange from capturing information, how it's embedded into the BIM model, and again, translating what that means for that structure. It's really been a natural development for the institution. We've been involved with things like BIM for water, BIM for survey. There's all these ancillary BIM groups that have sort of popped up, but everyone, it seems to be rallying around this sort of central organization. It's actually opening up the conversation to everybody that's in the surveying sector. And it's not just seen as something that's the role of the preserver of architects. I think the other thing is that we've got a lot of quantity surveyors and people that have got practical experience of dealing with the legal aspects within the BIM model. And it's only a matter of time before the solicitors get their hands on these things and we'll be having arguments over various clauses. So having membership with expertise in this sector, in this part of things, can actually add a lot of value to organisations such as UK BIM Alliance.
Yeah, and we certainly want to be more collaborative and less sort of legalese, don't we, within this industry? Because all that does is slow things down.
Absolutely.
It slows the payment process down, therefore slows the investment cycle down. Therefore, you know, we're not able to bring more people into the industry, more equipment into the industry. And that's not what we need right now.
No, and you're absolutely spot on. I think the BIM platform can give you is transparency. That transparency to be able to make better decisions, to actually understand what's happened. It also takes away the natural pinch points from people that get quite excited about these things. And it also gives a real common standard that everybody can actually understand and get around. And again, it helps generate those collaborative behaviours. And, you know, we're moving into a space where in 10, 15 years, everything will have a BIM model. And the government's mandated it, you know, for all public sector work. So the change is there, it's being driven.
Where the government mandates, other clients follow. But you mentioned before, Stephen, I think this is a really big, big problem for the whole industry. I noticed, again, you've gone into a training partnership with Built Intelligence. And, you know, we've talked about this. You know, we've got to upskill people, and we'll come on to bringing other people into the industry after this. But we've got to upskill people. We've also got to alienate people. You know, in the plant sector, we've got this problem where experienced operators feel that technologies like 3D machine control, like semi-autonomy with machines that we've just seen recently. Actually, I went to see Plant Force, a very big hire business that's brought in a semi-autonomous Kobelco system with a Leica Geosystems piece that uses, again, a valve from Husqo, which is an intelligent valve. So we're seeing all of this. But actually, Plant Force put on an incredibly experienced operator to that machine. And, you know, they've got that challenge of actually upskilling their operators, but actually also persuading the more traditional operators that have done it their way all the different times, that these are not going to take away their job. In fact, we need the more experienced people to take this on board to allow us to utilize it, because it's still digging, it's still those fundamentals, but then it's using this technology. But without the digging and the practical, you know, on-site experience, it's not going to work, is it? Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your thoughts and this Built Intelligence connection.
Just addressing your first point there at the end of your question, I suppose, was around the people aspect and the experienced machine drivers and the integration, how that works. If you remember what we talked about at the very beginning, people are really, you need to win people's hearts and minds. And I think one of the challenges I've seen is that a reticence to change because people feel that they're going to be consumed by and replaced by robots or digital technology or software. And so it's important to make sure when you bring in new products to market or you're looking at new ways of doing things, that people understand what their role is and they aren't being replaced, but the kind of work that they do is different. So if in the example you've given me there, that excavator drivers will move from just pure sitting in there in a machine all day pulling levers to an actual role of assurance and monitoring and making sure that things are right and actually understand, well, hang on a minute, that isn't right. Because with the best will in the world, site conditions dictate how effective a machine is, not the actual software that runs it. And so having somebody who can understand the conditions from experience is vitally, vitally important. And so the role that these people play will change, which leads really into the importance of continuing professional development, the importance of training and maintaining a skilled workforce. But it also brings with it opportunities to bring new and younger people into the sector, which we'll talk about later. But and this is very similar to our partnership with Built Intelligence. And the reason for doing that has been very, very much about opening up our membership to a resource that helps them to give them the tools. So as an institution, we want our members to be as well trained as they possibly can be. We want them to continue to develop professionally, and we want them to be thought leaders in the specific industry or jobs they're working in. In order to do that, we need to give them the support and the resources to do that. And traditionally, you know, our regions are very, very good at organizing CPD events and seminars, and there's still a big place for that. But we're in a world where we are connected in different ways. We've got members from Shetland to Cornwall, in Malaysia, Australia, Dubai. We've got members all around the world. How do we connect those members around a common platform? And certainly one of my aspirations as president was to create this online knowledge and learning hub for our members that they could come to actually develop their skills, but also impart their wisdom. So for members that are sort of in the senior years that are looking to, you know, capture all that great learning and put it in a central place that people in the younger early careers can take advantage of. And so as part of that aspiration of mine, the Built Intelligence was a natural platform to go to, because they've done a lot of the hard yards. They've got some excellent content and they're absolute leaders in the field. And so for me, it was just a real natural partnership. And it also underpins our commitment to people's training and development.
Yeah, and that's great. And that really brings us on nicely to the most important thing. You know, I'm not getting any younger, Stephen. You're probably not getting any younger, although you do look a lot younger than a few years ago when I saw you. So obviously you're enjoying being president. But basically, that does bring us into the whole element of people. You know, we've talked about upskilling people and all the rest of it. We know, and it's a continued broken record scenario, we have an equality, a diversity, an inclusion, and a young people issue in this industry. It used to be man and boy, it's now, you know, a challenge to actually even do that, you know, with the sort of plant operating piece. People used to be sat on there, grandfather's knee digging. You know, you're not allowed to do that with health and safety. Of course, that's the right element. We used to be able to pull from a sort of farming community in that sense as well. But, you know, people still see construction as me drudging out, placing a brick in the freezing cold, shaking to make a wall. And we've talked about this whole digitalization. You know, my sons are playing on their with their mates on all of these different games. You know, that's normal to them. And so what are we going to do to attract people into this industry? Because we don't shout about it enough. Yeah. We're doing that today. You told me earlier, you know, it's good for me to talk at people, to talk with people. But what can we do, you know, and how does that work? And obviously, and just to mention, you know, again, another big for the Institute, you are part of the Equality, Diversity and Inclusion Council. So again, you know, applause for doing that. Give me your thoughts on this, please.
Look, I could spend hours and hours talking about this, Peter. It's a subject that's really close to me personally. And I'll tell you for what, I have three daughters. And this stemmed from a conversation quite a few years ago with Mrs. Slessor, as we do, a bit of dinner table chat about future careers and my aspiration to indoctrinate my three daughters into the construction industry. I have to say I've probably failed miserably, but there you go. But one of the things that came out of that conversation was that, well, what would they want to go and work in construction for? They're boys' jobs, you know, they're guys' jobs. And a lot of the issues that construction faces is actually from a very early age, children are indoctrinated into this is a girl's job, this is a boy's job by parents, you know, and I'm not blaming parents by any stretch of the imagination, but it's easy for people to look at construction as being a very manual job or one that is, isn't very rewarding for all the reasons you've just said. And I think one of the biggest challenges that we've got as an industry is to actually change those perceptions. And we're making progress, slow progress, but we are making progress. The institution is heavily involved with the Survey Association. We've got a partnership that generates comics that call Get Kids Into Survey, you know, which is a great way of trying to encourage younger people at age. one of our fellows is a lady called Alison Watson, who runs an organisation, charity, educational charity called Class of Our Own. And if one thing I would say, Peter, is that Alison is definitely somebody worth getting onto your pod. She talks very passionately about getting young people into construction. And she works with a lot of main contractors to get people into all various different parts of the industry from school age. So she is actually looking to teach construction and construction skills to secondary school pupils. So all these kind of sort of small wins are starting to gather a bit of momentum. I think the one big change which is going to really help us is the advent of the digital workspace, the connected worksite. The one thing when I've been around the country doing careers events, as soon as I roll out our virtual reality headsets and show them, you know, having to go on an excavator or having to go actually digging, you know, digging with a shovel or looking at the hazards or, you know, that kind of interaction, part of me says, I don't know if they're that bothered about what they're doing. It's the fact that there's a bit of technology that they're used to and know and love and can actually do. And I think if you look at a lot of the things like surveyors do, for example, a lot of surveyors are involved with drone surveys and LIDAR surveys and actual skilled digital skills. And I think that natural change is actually starting to engender lots of new people coming into the industry with different ways of doing things. And I think the other thing is, and I touched on this earlier, is that we need different skills. If we want to change and we want to get all these efficiencies, then we can't keep doing the same things that we've been doing for the last 50 years. Fundamentally, construction hasn't changed since the start of the century. I did a presentation to a wee while ago, and I had two pictures. One was installing a pipe in 1903 and one installing a pipe in 2020. And it, apart from a little bit better health and safety and temporary works, the operation was exactly the same. And we need to get young people into think differently about doing things. Data intelligence, data management, data analytics, these are different skills that will be needed in the industry to actually understand all the data that we have. What we will then need from excavator drivers, from engineers, from construction managers is actually what we want is your experience and your skills in understanding what that data means and what it means to a project. And I think that's where you'll generate lots of new opportunities. And you've touched on, again, something that's really, really close to my heart is the EDI piece that we're doing within the institution at the moment. I read on LinkedIn, one of our members, a girl called Jenna Rourke, she's just been promoted to commercial director at Costains.
I saw that.
Love Jenna. I did my master's with Jenna years ago, so I've known each for a long time. She's so passionate about bringing young people and young women and others into the industry. It's incredible. I just think that we need more people like Jenna to champion the younger people in the earlier days about doing things. My dog's just started barking, Peter. So
don't you worry about that. He's agreeing with you. That's his way of applauding us. So yeah. I can hear him slightly, but don't worry about that at all. But you know, so really, these sort of school things are elements for the STEM activities. Can we see more of that stuff coming in further, you know, at higher levels, at lower levels? What are the sort of other activities in this sort of STEM piece that you get? And could you just explain what STEM is to the listeners as well, please?
Well, Science, Technology, Engineering and Maths is the acronym STEM. And really, it encompasses many, many things. It isn't just about construction. But getting STEM activities embedded earlier is really one of the biggest challenges, because in some ways it's been simplified by the move to digital. The easiest thing that I have found is getting people in the industry is to turn up on site with a CAD operator and let them have a go at just designing something in CAD. That's been the easiest thing. I took two of my younger daughters to Bam Nuttall up in Scotland through one of their partner companies, Ritchie's, who do the site investigation.
Yeah.
Did an open day a couple of years ago at Easter. They had one for girls and one for boys. And I took my daughters to the girls' day out, and it was incredible, because what they did is they let them have a go at doing concrete cube tests. They let them have a go at doing the ICE bridge building. They let them have a go sitting in an excavator, sitting, pulling that thing you talked about earlier, in a safe environment where they get a go at moving the excavator around. Let them have a go getting the hands mucky, getting amongst it. They had an absolute ball. And it's the practical elements of the work that we do, I think, are the most exciting. Yeah. It's not about being stuck in an office all the time, sitting in front of a computer screen. actually we're really interactive. We get out and about, we see the world, we are built environment professionals. Whether you're an excavator driver or whether you're a construction manager, we work in this sector. And so getting young people should be really easy to get excited about that.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I have done is got actually my, well, he was 11 when he first started, and hopefully we'll be getting back out. He's now 13. My son, Lucas, who's been interviewing people, you know, and one of the things which we'd like to do one day, I think, Stephen, is come up to Scotland and get Lucas to interview you as a 13-year-old who's looking at those sort of things. But let's sort of round this up and talk about the things that we're excited about in your sector, Stephen, moving into 2021. I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, we talked about sharing cloud-based data, but mobile mapping, reality capture is the new thing as well, isn't it, Stephen? You know, and that visualization. So tell me about other things that are really going to be exciting you as we now, I mean, the one thing that COVID has done is it's accelerated change rapidly, hasn't it? So tell me about this sort of, you know, the exciting mobile mapping, reality capture, all these new things that are coming out. What do you think?
Well, Peter, what I would say to you is that we are on the cusp of a massive program of investment. Great news about vaccines, great news about, you know, being able to see light at the end of the tunnel. However, we have got a really critical, you know, 3 or 4 months ahead of us that need to be addressed. But I am an eternal optimist. And the reason I'm an eternal optimist is because I look at the future and I can see the opportunity that is there. And things you've talked about there about reality capture, and these are concepts that have actually been developed by people playing games in their bedrooms over the years and actually realized that, hang on a minute, there's a whole world of things that we can do. And one of the things I would say is that what surveyors are great at is just like the art of the possible. I think it, having an open mind and seeing what these things are and can do is incredibly powerful. Reality capture isn't something that I know a great deal about, so it's been difficult for it'll be difficult for me to give you a real honest answer. But what I can tell you is that certainly when I look at the different technologies that are coming up into the horizon that excite me, the one thing that probably excites me out of everything is blockchain and automation.
Right.
And the reason I say that is that it will fundamentally transform our lives and make them much less transactional, because the blockchain will take all the pain out of the transactions. And by that, I mean paperwork. You know, nobody who's in a construction environment likes doing paperwork if they can avoid it, especially record keeper. Now, as a surveyor, records is something that's embedded on your mind from a young age in surveying QS school. But, you know, having something like blockchain there that can automate and verify and manage that process, incredibly exciting. The work that's gone in LiDAR and four-dimensional mapping, underground mapping, is incredible. Some of the work that some of the members of the institution are doing around underground mapping of assets, that's got a real potential to transform, like, people that work in the earthwork and plant sectors, because obviously service strikes is a real challenge, real health and safety hazard for a lot of people who work in that space. There's a big ongoing exercise to map digitally underground all the underground assets. You know, that's just right at the beginning of that journey, but I really feel that it's, you know, it's one of those things that really excites me to say that could really change how, like, people who drive excavators work. So it's a bit of a woolly answer, Pete. I'm sorry about that.
The thing for me, it's like I met a guys from Get Mapping who are basically doing exactly what you said, and I've seen the way in which they can map a road, you know, and I've had a go with the sort of ground penetrating radars. Yeah. It's, you know, the one I did, it looked a little bit like a lawnmower. Yeah. Tell me that I was going over actually a utility, so, you know, like a lawnmower that would have gone through the cable or whatever. You know, I could see that. And I think, you know, for me, that you're absolutely right. You know, having this map, this underground map, is probably one of the biggest things with earthworks. You know, a utility strike, one, can kill someone. Two, can actually take down everything in the area from a perspective of flooding, of actually turning the electricity off, and God forbid you turn the electricity and the Wi-Fi off nowadays, Stephen, that's a big, big problem. But, you know, I do think that taking this gamification, as we're looking at it and what you're saying, and bringing it into the reality, the real world. You know, I've seen these sort of handheld devices. You walk around the inside of a cathedral and it's got completely mapped to the nth degree, the tiniest of these little dots that make up this visualization. And then, you know, as you take, like you say, that visualization data into a virtual reality headset, you can actually see something, or even a device in front of your hand with an iPhone, you can see something that says that's where things are going to be. That's the vision of this bridge, of this structure, of this of this flood defense, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's very exciting for that to happen, isn't it, really?
It is. And, you know, before I came on this call, I was having a chat with the Robert Gordon University. I'm a visiting professor there, and they're talking about designing a new course around design for manufacture and assembly and disassembly, you know. And so because the carbon challenge we're facing is absolutely incredible, you know, there's a real desire within the industry to really promote low carbon, zero carbon solutions. And we can only do that by being innovative. We need these kind of ideas. We need this new kind of tools to be able to do that. Certainly from my perspective, embracing that will help drive all these changes right the way through. Having that overall aim of net zero to me is really aspirational and something that everybody could buy into. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, and the one thing from me that I love, it's a little pet thing of mine, I call it demolition to demolition, Stephen.
So
basically, you demolish something, but you survey that first, so you demolish it properly. You demolish this old structure, you then get down to the earthworks, you then, this is all surveyors, you then survey that, you find out where all those assets are, you then create all of the earthworks models, and people do that, and all the rest of it, and then you build the structure, and you see all the 3D BIM, and you understand that that's a light switch, and it's the ABC123 light switch, so if you need to replace it, that's the one you replace it with. Then the structure or the building comes to the end of its useful life, and you demolish it and 100% recycle it, because you've seen all of the tiniest little point cloud data for that, and you can understand how to demolish it. And then you say to the architects, hey, Mr. Architect, you've basically going to design this new structure, by the way, that's where the services are, that's where you're going to design it from. Yeah. And out, so you plug and play, isn't it? That's what we're doing.
Peter, it's absolutely right. And I think that circular economy approach that you've just described there is exactly where my head's at. And, you know, when you think about DFMA, you've got to think about the D at the end of it, the disassembly.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a whole life cycle asset. And then you've almost got to think, right, well, what am I going to use when I disassemble that, you know, asset? What can it then be used for? How can we recycle that? Mm. You know, so if it's concrete, can the concrete be crushed? Can it be then used as aggregate? What can it be? You know, everything needs to be thought through. And you're right, surveyors are right in the middle of all of that, because the data they're capturing is what is being used to make decisions on. And that's why, as an institution, having members that have got that level of competence, level of experience and skills is so important to the industry. And as you just described, people that work in the earthwork sector and the plant sector as well.
Stephen, I think that's a great place to end our conversation. It's going to be a really exciting 2021. We've managed to talk for way longer than expected, but I knew that was going to happen in the first place, because we've met before, and I know the passion is there. And what I really like, Stephen, about yourself is you're just like me. It's positivity that we need right now. It's vision, and it's actually telling the story for other people to listen to. It's been a pleasure. We're going to try and get this one out as fast as we can. And look after yourself, Stephen, and your family. And we will talk again, no doubt.
Peter, thanks so much for the opportunity. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Please all stay safe and have a great 2021 with you and your families.
Cheers, Stephen. Bye-bye.
Bye, Peter.